Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Maria Armudian, host of the Scholar Circle, sitting in for Ian Masters, who's on a well-deserved vacation. In this hour, climate scientists say the climate is, quote, changing before our eyes, end quote. Will the International Conference on Climate finally take action to thwart more disasters? Then, is the fiscal cliff real, or is it a political tool to change the shape of government? Then, European countries are divided on the Palestinian statehood vote. What might the vote mean for the future of the conflict in Israel and Palestine? We have with us Bill McKibben. He is the best-selling author of numerous books, including The End of Nature and Earth. He's also the founder of 350.org, an environmental organization dedicated to solving the problem of climate change. Larry Schweiger also joins us. Larry Schweiger is the president and CEO of the National Wildlife Federation and the author of the award-winning Last Chance, Preserving Life on Earth. Welcome to you both. Thank you both for joining us here.
Well, thank you. And what a pleasure to be on with Larry, too.
I'm so pleased to get you both together. Let me just say that to the beginning. I think what I'd like to begin with is the latest scientific reality is looking extraordinarily stark. There has been a lot of talk, particularly Bill McKibben, you've been talking about a so-called tipping point. And we're hearing some pretty scary numbers. Where are we with this so-called tipping point?
Well, I think there's never going to be like a tipping point past which everything is, you know, on one side of which things were good and on the other side of which everything's irredeemable. But we are starting to see signs from the natural world of a kind of amplification of the warming that humans have caused by pouring carbon into the atmosphere. There was a paper that came out a couple of days ago, a pretty depressing one, talking about the fact that permafrost in the Arctic now seems to be melting at a very rapid rate. More rapid than we had suspected. And that's very bad news because we don't have any way really of refreezing it. We melted it by burning all that coal and gas and oil, but as it melts, it then releases lots of methane and carbon into the atmosphere. And we don't have any way to dial back that thermostat. So the upshot is we're really to the point when we have to take action, when there's no room for messing around at the edges. We got to take tough action to leave coal and gas and oil in the ground now. And hopefully, things like Sandy or the drought or the melt of the Arctic this summer will begin to convince our policymakers to actually make a little policy for once.
Larry Schweiger.
Well, to add to what Bill said, and I completely agree with everything he just said there, but I think to add to that, PricewaterhouseCoopers, which is hardly a left-wing organization, assessed this situation. This is their fourth assessment, and they determined that we need to cut our total carbon emissions annually by about 5% a year till the year 2050. So they're talking about a very aggressive effort to dial down the carbon dioxide emissions that we're producing. And in order to do that, we need to have very bold and, frankly, dramatic decisions across not just the United States, but across the planet. And we need to find new ways to get there. And having annual conversations that lead to nothing is not the way to do that. We need to tie carbon targets to trade and put some teeth into a process that will actually work for the future.
Well, you've just given me two subjects to talk about. So I want to get into both these international conversations that do seem to go nowhere and also some of the policy issues. But there's one thing I wanted to do before we went there, and that deals with what some of the effects are. We did see Sandy, of course, and people are finally starting to get to be a little more alert about the possibilities of these extreme weather changes. But I think there are a lot of other changes people don't quite understand. Bill McKibben, why don't you tell us what some of these things are that we might face that are not getting covered in the news?
Well, look, here are the sort of huge-scale changes you can see going on. One, pretty much everything frozen on Earth is melting, and melting very fast, the cryosphere. Two, the oceans, our biggest thing on Earth, are acidifying very rapidly. The ocean is 30% more acid than it was 40 years ago. And there was a paper today saying that at current rates, it'll be 150% more acid than that by the end of the century, which is not good news if you happen to be some one of those creatures, at the bottom of the marine food chain. But then maybe the changes we see most on land are come from the fact that warm air holds more water vapor than cold. And that means the atmosphere is about 5% wetter than it was 40 years ago. That loads the dice for drought and for flood, and both of which we're seeing. And I think people are making the connections. I was just saying to someone a minute ago, the polling data shows that the number of Americans concerned about climate change has gone through the roof in the last 2 years. It's up about 74% of Americans, which is more Americans than you get to agree on almost anything. And the reason is, such a high percentage of us live, 80% of Americans live in counties that have had federally declared disasters in the last couple of years. At this point, it's like, you know, who are you going to believe, Exxon or your own lying eyes, you know?
And Larry Schweiger, you, of course, being with the Wildlife Federation, focus on the wildlife issues. Biodiversity is one of the primary effects that we're seeing. How bad is that?
Well, the scientists have some time ago actually identified that if we continue to heat the planet up, we could see somewhere between 30 and 70% of the total species on the planet either extinct or on the road to extinction in the next several decades. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, that we need to be really paying close attention to. You know, it's pure hubris to suggest that we can somehow throw half the species off the planet without having an enormous impact on human populations. So it's a real threat. We're seeing some of that already. You know, ecosystems are in real stress conditions. Bill talked about the oceans. We're also seeing estuaries warm up, having greater dead zones as a result of high temperatures and pollution. We're seeing in other places as well. Moose, for example, are on the decline because they are much more of a cold weather species, and as it warms up, they have a harder time. So we're seeing wildlife already reacting. In fact, they've been reacting for literally decades. Rachel Carson wrote about it in 1950, and she saw some of the early signs of change. And so wildlife are going to be one of the things that are impacted early in the process.
So while we're talking here, of course, we know that one of these climate conferences is going on. Larry Schweiger, you suggested that it is not particularly effective. What are you seeing coming out of there, and why do you think that it's not having any effect, and do you think that with things like Sandy, maybe it will start to progress?
Well, first of all, the U.S. government needs to take these international conferences seriously. They need to step up with real proposals, and we need to have everyone participate together. But at the end of the day, if you make agreements and you don't live up to those agreements, and we haven't been, we need to have a mechanism to have enforcement and have a way to hold people accountable for their promises. We've seen the total carbon emissions actually increase last year, despite the years and years of conferences that have been held. So it's time to get serious. It's time to quit talking and start doing. And it's time to create a mechanism for holding each other accountable.
Now, there does seem to be some shifting from some of the manufacturers of doubt, as we call them, the deniers of the science. Is it significant yet, Bill McKibben?
Well, I think that there's a few sort of signs that things might be they might be starting to have a little bit harder time getting away with what they're doing. The CEO of Exxon this summer actually said what his predecessors had always refused to say, that climate change was real. But the minute he said it in a speech at the Council on Foreign Relations, he immediately said, but of course it's an engineering solution with engineering problem with engineering solutions. And he went on to propose the solution that we move our crop production areas to other parts of the world, which if you think about the fact that we already have farms every place that there's soil, isn't a very good engineering solution. In fact, there are no engineering solutions. The only solution is to stop these guys from pouring carbon into the atmosphere, turn them from fossil fuel companies into energy companies. But that won't happen as long as they're making money at the scale they are now, as long as there's not a price on carbon. In order to get that, we have to reduce their political power somewhat. So we've launched divestment movements as of today on 100 campuses around the country, and lots more actions like that to come. we need to make people understand that these guys are the new tobacco industry. Instead of taking people out one individual at a time, they're going after us, you know, one planet at a time, and they need to lose their kind of social license to do that.
Well, given the re-election of Barack Obama, and Larry Schweiger, you had said in another article that these elections really did open a window for politics of the environment. Do you see at this point a shift in leadership from the U.S., either on the international scale or on the national scale?
Well, we have been hearing from President Obama that he is going to take up climate in his second term, and he's going to deal with the fiscal cliff first and then deal with the climate issue. And I don't think they have their game plan done yet. I think they are still looking for the right pathway. And I think it's up to us right now to help frame up that new pathway for them, to show them what needs to be done. We need to find a way to cut at least 5% a year to get us to a safe harbor. And if we're not coming up with bold enough plans to achieve that, we're not really solving the problem, because what Bill's talking about, the carbon bomb that's in the north, is being released, and it will continue to be released so long as we're putting more carbon in the sky. We're going to accelerate that. It's like putting gasoline on a fire. So we're adding to that each year, and so it's accelerating that natural melt that's occurring. Not natural, but the natural landscapes are melting now, and that is a very, very dangerous thing. So I think it's important that we make clear to our elected officials that this is an urgent matter. It's not something we can kick the can down the road. It's not something we can take small bites out of. It's something we need to face very aggressively and very responsibly.
So how do we reduce that 5%? Bill McKibben, is there something being put forward by your organization?
Sure. I mean, look, the first rule of holes is when you're in one, stop digging. And in this case, it's literal. We'll find out if the president's serious at all about this stuff when he makes the decision about whether or not to permit this Keystone pipeline down from the tar sands of Canada. If he lets it go through, that's 900,000 barrels of oil a day that would otherwise have stayed in the ground. That exactly to the barrel almost wipes out the savings that come from the one good thing he's done, increasing automobile mileage standards. And this is something he can do without asking John Boehner or Mitch McConnell or anybody else. He gets to make the decision, and we'll find out. I mean, I think it's the purest litmus test, and I got to say, it's also been the great moment for the environmental community in recent years to see the grassroots youth activists come together with our really powerful organizations like NWF, like the Natural Resources Defense Council or the Sierra Club. For the very first time in a long time, people are united in a serious way, and if we lose on the Keystone Pipeline, I fear that will shatter. And if we win on it, I think it's this has created the biggest civil disobedience action in 30 years in this country. 1,253 people went to jail, put their bodies on the line to stop that thing. If we win this fight, then we have the movement that can go on to do a lot more.
It seems to me, speaking with scientists that we do on our scholar circle, that there are already designs that could power the entire world with renewables, and that they're the only obstacle that they argue is really a political obstacle. It's not economic. It's not materials. That it can be done by 2030. And with President Obama's first administration and with Stephen Chu as the Secretary of Energy, it seems like he started down that path with the stimulus. Would it make sense to then just take what Stephen Chu and the stimulus started and multiply it? Bill McKibben, why don't you take it first?
Yeah, look, the answer to this question is one word long, and that answer is Germany. The Germans are the one big country that tried to take this seriously. Their energy minister and the conservative government of Angela Merkel said 2 weeks ago that they were going to blow past their target of 33% renewable energy by 2020, which would have been way ahead of the rest of the world. He said, we're going to be at 50% and closing in on 66%. There were days this summer when Germany generated more than half the power it used from solar panels within its borders. And this is Germany, okay? I mean, Munich is north of Montreal. They don't have California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Florida to, you know, pad their statistics. It's proof that there's not any technological barrier to doing what needs to be doing. The barrier is entirely a barrier of political will, and we just have to get down to it. We have to decide we're going to spend the money, do the work, and get it done.
Now, the fact that neither of you went to the conference in Qatar signifies that you're not expecting the U.S. to sign on to anything. At the same time, we have some of the other countries that are major emission releasers, such as China, also resisting. Can the U.S. do it alone? Larry Schweiger.
Well, I think personally that I believe for a long time that if the U.S. steps up and commits to a serious plan and puts the legislation in place, that will be a very strong signal to countries like China, like some of the other major emitters, and to you know, to send that bold signal is what really needs to be done. And you know, we have you know, most of the carbon dioxide in the sky is sadly ours. The Chinese have now become greater emitters than we are, but clearly we need to lead the way. And as Bill points out, the technology is there. The problem with just a stimulus program alone is, unless you have the demand by putting a price on carbon or by some other mechanism, you're not really going to get the transformation that needs to occur. For example, there's all sorts of subsidies for fossil fuels today, and those minor subsidies for wind and solar, are particularly wind right now, are disappearing, and the wind industry is dying. I mean, you know, you take Vestas Wind, for example. Their stock went from $42 a share. Now it's down to less than $2 a share. And the reason for that is that there's little hope in the minds of investors that that we're going to really do the right thing and give wind the wiggle room it needs to continue to grow. And that's a very troubling thing, because here we are on one hand looking at the world overheating. We're seeing enormous damage from fires and floods and droughts and terrible superstorms. And we're doing the very things that will actually cripple the industry that will get us out of this ditch. And so in my mind, we have a very serious policy failure here, and one that needs to be addressed.
Larry's just right. We're doing exactly the opposite of Germany. We're, whatever you spell Germany backwards, that's what we're doing right now. And he's also absolutely right that we've got to work around the world to make it happen. 350.org works in 191 countries, every country but North Korea. We're going to convene a summit in Istanbul in June with six or seven young people from each country on Earth. And what they're going to do there is tell the UN what they actually have to be doing, instead of the insipid talk shop that they've been operating for the last 20 years on this issue. Young people are going to say, here's what needs to happen. Here's the numbers. Here's how it works. And do our best to shame them some. See if we can get them to work somehow or another. Because right now, nobody's doing it. Not Washington, not Beijing, not any place.
And are there innovative ideas that are emerging, either from your allies in Congress? I know some cities and counties are trying to take things on. Some states are taking things on. Larry Schweiger, why don't you take that?
Well, I think that there's been a number of wonderful examples of cities and states that have taken bold action. I think the I'm here in California right now, and the good work that's happened in California and the willingness to stay with an aggressive carbon reduction plan is really a great model for us to look at. And if you look at cities, for example, Chattanooga is replacing all of its streetlights with LEDs that will also allow for other benefits to the community and save about 80% of the energy that they're spending, and do it in a way that both protects the environment, makes their life actually better. And so I think there are examples, you know, from top to bottom of what we can do. It, as Bill said earlier, it's not the technology, it's not the capacity, it's a willingness, it's the political will. And that's what's flawed. And the reason it's flawed is because behind every politician that's denying climate, there's an oil company or a coal company standing there with a bag full of money. And I think we should just call it out the way it is. These folks have been taking money from the polluters to get reelected, and they are going to dance whatever song that they want them to dance to. And Bill, that's what we're seeing.
Bill McKibben, anything you'd like to add to that?
No, look, Larry is, as always, thought about this longer and deeper than just about anyone. Our problem is the fossil fuel industry, above all, and so we're just going to keep we'll keep talking about it, but we're doing all we can to do more than talk. We are trying to organize just as fast as we can, and it's not just 350. It's everyone. I had the pleasure of being down in Georgia the other day and met one of NWF's great organizers, a young woman named Erica Williams, at one of the working for them down there. And you know, I just, like, she was so emblematic of the young people all over this country and all over this world who we get to see every day, who are doing the right thing, starting to put the pressure on. My fear is that we're very short on time. We have to do this with such speed that it's going to take real commitment, and so far we don't see much more than token commitment, even out of people that we've supported, like the president.
And I know, Bill McKibben, speaking of time, you need to go. I'm going to let you
go on stage here. Yes.
What? We're going to let you go. And Larry Schweiger, I have one last question for you.
Sure.
That is,
good luck, Bill.
And that is, with the BP settlement that just occurred, do you think that was fair?
That is hopefully just a down payment on what BP will ultimately pay. You know, they have not paid the penalties under the Clean Water Act. And you know, when you do the math on that, we're talking, you know, upwards of $40 billion of liability based on the amount of pollution that they put into the Gulf of Mexico. And there's actually clear penalties in the act for these spills. And, you know, they need to pay up, and it's time that they pay their full price. And I should say that that money, 80% of it, will be used back in the region to largely to restore the coastal damage that's been done over the decades, as well as to help nature recover from the enormous pollution load that's been put into the Gulf of Mexico. So we think it's just a step, but not the full responsibility.
Well, Larry Schweiger, thank you so much. And I know we've lost Bill McKibben already, but we'll thank him publicly as well. And we'll have you back very shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Larry Schweiger is the president and CEO of the National Wildlife Federation and the author of Last Chance, Preserving Life on Earth. Bill McKibben is best-selling author of numerous books, including The End of Nature and Earth. He's also the founder of 350.org, an organization dedicated to solving the problem of climate change. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Sacred land, it has seen many hands, it has wealth and gold, yet it is fragile and old, and now the greedy souls just don't care to know all the changes it will confront. So speak out loud of the things you are proud, and if you love this coast, then keep it clean as it holds, cause the way that it shines may just dwindle with time, with the changes it will.